Okay. Morning will be in chapter 26 of Isaiah. Of course, it's just a continuation of 25 previous chapters. Verse 1, we start, "In that day shall his song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for walls and bulwarks. Open ye the gates, and the righteous nation that keeps the truth may that the righteous nation which keeps the truth may enter in. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you. Trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. For he brings down them that dwell on high, the lofty city. He lays it low, he brings it low even to the ground, he brings it even to the dust. And the foot shall tread it down, even the feet of the poor and the steps of the needy. The way of the just is uprightness, thou most upright, doest weigh the path of the just. Yea, in the way of thy judgments, O Lord, have we waited for you. The desire of our soul is to thy name and to the remembrance of you. With my soul have I desired thee in the night. Yea, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early. For when thy judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. Let favor be showed to the wicked, yet will he not learn righteousness. In the land of uprightness will he deal unjustly, and will not behold the majesty of the Lord. Lord, when your hand is lifted up, they will not see, but they shall see and be ashamed for their envy at the people. Yea, the fire of your enemies shall devour them. Lord, thou wilt ordain peace for us, for you also have wrought all our work in us. O Lord our God, other lords beside you have had dominion over us, but by you only will we make mention of your name. They are dead, they shall not live. They are deceased, they shall not rise. Therefore hast thou visited and destroyed them and made all their memory to perish. You have increased the nation, O Lord. Thou hast increased the nation. You are glorified. You have removed it far into all the ends of the earth. Lord, in trouble they have visited you. They poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them. Like a woman with child that draws near the time of her delivery is in pain and cries out in her pain, so have we been in your sight, O Lord. We have been with child and we have been in pain. We have, as it were, wrought forth wind. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. Neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. Thy dead men shall live together with my dead body, shall they arise. Awake and sing, you that dwell in the dust, for thy dew is as the dew of the herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood and shall no more cover her slain." Boy, there's some much good stuff in here when you start to see what it really says. Okay, let's go back to the first verse and see what it says again. Let's break it down. In that day, what day are we talking about? The day of the Lord. Right now. It's now. Every time you say it, it's now. Whenever it is. Shall this song be sung in the land of Judah? What's Judah? In the land of praise. Okay? We have a strong city. That's the song saying, we have a strong city. Salvation, or literally deliverance, will God appoint. Who's going to appoint it? See, it's not up to us, is it? For walls, or for walls of protection and a fortress. It should say, it says walls of protection and a bulwark, or it should say, literally, walls of protection and a fortress. Verse 2 goes on and says, open ye the gates, or open wide the door, that the, what? The justified or the righteous Gentiles, which keep the truth, may enter in. And that's what it should say. Read it again. Open wide the door that the justified Gentiles, which keep the truth, may enter in. He's telling you there's a new covenant. It's like Paul said, you know, he is a Jew, is not one outwardly, but inwardly. He said, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind or purpose is what? stayed or rests on you because he trusts you. If your mind stays on God, what's he going to do? He's going to protect you. He's going to shield you. He's going to cover you for everything, isn't he? In Proverbs it says that that God will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish. Well, if he's not going to let you starve, he's surely not going to let somebody kill you, is he? If you have a purpose in his life, in his plan, then you're going to be there no matter what anybody else says. Nobody can do anything about that and change that, can they? Verse 4 goes on and says, trust in the Lord forever, because in the Lord Yahweh is everlasting strength. But literally says, the Lord Jehovah is the everlasting rock. In 1 Corinthians, it tells you the rock that traveled with them in the desert when they were out in the wilderness for 40 years, the rock that followed them was Christ. 1 Corinthians 11 says that. Verse 5, because he brings down them that dwell on high. In the New Covenant, he says, if you exalt yourself, what's he going to do? Abase you or bring you down. If you abase yourself, he'll exalt you when due time. Okay. The lofty city. What is the lofty city? Babylon. The lofty city is pride, prideful. It's Babylon. Yep. He lays it low. He lays it low even to the ground. He brings it even to the even to dust. So he says he's going to destroy that pride in every one of us. That ought to make everybody happy, except for the prideful. The ones that are really prideful, you know, don't want to give it up. They're going to fight for it all the way. Verse 6 goes on and says, the foot. What's the foot represent? Your lifestyle. Okay. So the foot or the feet or the lifestyle shall tread it down, even the lifestyle of the humble or the lowly. And the steps or the lifestyle of the humble, he says it twice, there's a witness of it. So it's the humility and the lifestyle of the humble that's going to tear down the pride, isn't it? You know those two things can't be together? You can't be prideful and humble at the same time, can you? That'd be an oxymoron to even make that statement, to say that they work together. But the church tries to do that. Verse 7, the way or the course of the just is what? It says uprightness. What does anybody else's translation say? Okay, the word uprightness there should say several different things. It could say even, level, smooth, and the word that I prefer there is consistent. The path of the just is consistency. How's that? We're never changing, see? Jesus walked this life on a level course. He didn't worry about the stones in the road. He just moved them out of the way and walked over. He's a flatliner, see? And that's the way we're supposed to be. He said, uprightness, you most upright or you most righteous. Do way, and the word way is not a literal rendering there that's really good. The best rendering is, you do prepare the circular path of the just. That's what it literally says. Now, why would it say you prepare the circular path of the just? He said we were with him before the foundation of the world, right? And he sent us on a journey. Is that correct? Okay. To get back, and the journey is to take a course, but yet end up coming back to him, isn't it? What would that be called? A circular path. You took a course out and you come back. You went in a circle. Came right back where you're at. Okay. Verse 8 goes on to say, yea, in the way of your judgments, and we have to realize that judgments are positive and negative, and God doesn't make judgments to destroy. He makes judgments to do what? To correct. To improve our character, right? He's not destroying. He's correcting us. O Lord, have we waited for you? Have we, judgments, O Lord, have we waited for you the desire of our what? Well, I like this word better than that. I like the desire of our inner man. The desire of my inner man is to your nature and character. Okay? Hebrew word there, shame, which means the same as anomen in the Greek, you know, the honor and character and authority. And to the what? The remembrance of you. Do you remember what? Now let me just use the remember again. Do you remember in Matthew 26:36 or 26:26, where he said, as oft as you do this, you do it in remembrance of me, or to remember me. Remember what we're saying? This is the same thing. And to the remembrance. Remembrance, when you take a body and cut it into pieces, you would say you dismembered a body, wouldn't you? When you put it back together, what'd you do? You remembered it. So he's not talking about remembering in your brain. He's talking about bringing the body back together. It's called the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of what? Oneness. See, that's what this is all about. Bringing us back to where we go. In that circular path, we're going to come right back to where we started. But when we get back, we're going to have an experience, aren't we? We had a journey that taught us something. And when we come back to that starting point, we're going to have something to give to people. Beg your pardon?
Bringing the members back together.
That's right. Bringing it all back, the body of Christ, all back together. And it says in verse 9, with my soul, again it should be with my inner man, have I desired you. The inner man, and like you said a while ago, Lloyd, the inner man literally is my spirit man. But I really like that word inner man. It separates that from the external, which is the soulish part.
Showing where he's working
at. Right, and his location's inside. With my inner man have I desired you in the night. Yes. With my spirit within me will I seek you early. Because when your judgments are in the earth, and you think he's talking about this planet we're walking around on? When your judgments, your corrective judgments are in your earth, okay? In your earth, my earth, the inhabitants of the world, that's not the globe. See, that's the globe out there, the world, not the earth. Will learn righteousness. The people in the world's going to learn righteousness when I learn righteousness. Do you hear me?
That's because you'll look at them differently.
When they look, they'll look at me differently too. Do you hear what I'm saying? When you learn righteousness, guess what? When that righteousness is in the earth, you're going to teach people around you. They're going to see you. You won't have to preach at them. They'll see your lifestyle.
That's grace.
That's grace and mercy. Verse 10 says, let favor be showed to the wicked. What? You mean he didn't say throw them in hell and burn them? Look what he says. Let favor, this is the heart of God. Let favor be showed to the wicked. Yet will he not learn righteousness. God says, we give them favor, we give them mercy and grace, yet they will not learn righteousness. In the land of uprightness, or literally integrity and truth, will he distort and will not perceive or see the majesty of the Lord? See, the natural man, like Paul said in Corinthians, cannot receive anything from the Spirit of God. Neither can he, because it's spiritually discerned, right? So he's saying, even though you give them mercy and grace, you give them a favor, and it doesn't do any good because they're still the natural man. Are you going to make a dog quit barking just because you say quit barking? His nature is to bark, isn't it? You can't change that beast nature.
It doesn't have the ability.
No. Can't do it. We have to realize that nature has to die.
Well, it's like trying to take a dog and teach it how to do algebra.
Yeah, it's not going to work. It's not his nature.
You say, haven't you been studying this?
Yeah. That's not going to work, is it? Verse 11, we got to realize, first of all, that this nature's got to die. And it's a thinking process. Remember what I said in James, a double-minded man's unstable in what?
Oh.
In everything that they do. See? So we got to get that one man in the earth has to be taken away and the other will remain, the Christ. So in verse 11 it says, and when your hand is lifted up, what's his hand represent?
Work.
His works. When his works are lifted up, they will not see. But they shall see and be ashamed for their jealousies or envies at the people. Yea, the fire of your enemies shall devour them. Now, he was an apostle and a prophet, wasn't he? He was a prophet, a priest, a king, an apostle. He was everything, was he not? And there was a gift given to humanity called apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teacher. You know, that hand is lifted up, but they will not see. What do you think he's saying when he said lifted up? How about the crucifixion? If I be lifted up, signifying the death of the cross, I'll draw all humanity unto me. He's starting to talk about the crucifixion here. They will not see; they shall see and be but they shall see and be ashamed for their envy. What did the people stand at the cross? What do you think those people felt like when he was crucified? When what went down at the end of it? They were ashamed. They wanted to go hide, and a lot of them did, didn't they? Just took off and ran and hid. The ones that stood and watched it.
And then I think there were those that didn't even face it because they were not awake at the fact.
Yeah. But most of them knew. Most of them knew. Verse 12, it goes on and says, Lord, you will establish peace for us. Who's going to establish our peace?
God.
See, it's already been done now, but at the time this was written, it hadn't been done in fruition of the earth, has it? When he went to the cross is what he was talking about. He said, my peace I leave unto you. That meant he was going away, didn't it? And he hadn't went away yet until the cross. So, but now the peace has already been established for us because you have done all the work in us. How much did he do?
All of it.
Well, how come the church keeps telling you got to do this? You got to jump through a hoop. You got to say it out of the left side of your mouth, part your hair on the right side of your head. You got to keep your head covered. You got to take communion every week. You got to do this. You got to do that. Those are all rules and regulations under the law, are they not? So guess what? Anything you tell me to do or not do is a law. And the book says clearly if you live under the law, you're cursed. And yet the whole church world doesn't understand that. They're living under a curse because they're trying to live and earn their way in. And clearly it says in Ephesians, it's a gift of God. Not of works, lest any man should boast. See, we got to realize this has nothing to do with us. It's all to do with what he did. And he said in that verse right there clearly, Lord, you have established peace in us because you have done all, not our, but the work in us. You've done all the work in us. On into 13. O Lord our God, other lords beside you have had dominion over us, but by you only will we make mention of your name. That's your honor, your authority, your character, your nature. You know. They are dead, they shall not live. They are deceased, they shall not rise. Therefore you visited and destroyed them and made all their memory to perish. He's talking about flesh people, flesh gods that they had. You have increased the nation, O Lord. You have increased the nation. You are glorified. You have extended it far to all the ends of the earth, or all the borders of the earth. So he said, you've extended it. You've increased the nations to the whole earth. Wouldn't that be all? Wouldn't that be reconciliation also? Verse 16, Lord, in trouble they have wanted you. That's what it should say. It says, it should say wanted. Every time the church world or somebody in the world gets in trouble, what do they do? Oh God, help me, help me. Help me, brother, help me, help me. They poured out a prayer like disciplines, when discipline was upon them. They poured out the prayer when your discipline was upon them. Who's in control of all the works it just said down there in verse 12?
God.
God is. So when he sends a discipline upon us, the first thing you do is call up the devil and try to rebuke it. They're trying to rebuke God. I remember telling a lady, I won't even mention her name because she lives locally around here. And we were over in church over in, what street we live? Was on the big church we built in town? 11th Street. And she walked in one day, and I was in there just doing some work, and she come in. She said, I'd like to maybe visit this fellowship, see what's going on. And I said, well, sure, just come on in, sit down. We'll talk a little bit, you know. And she sat down and started talking to me. And after we talked a short distance, she said, oh, my God. And I said, what? She said, I've been rebuking God. I said, Probably, that's what most people do, because God is in charge of all things. So everything that comes, you know, just like it says right here, you know, they come to you when God starts chastening you or correcting you or disciplining you. And she realized it herself, but it didn't do any good because she went off and wandered away. So that's her business, not mine. Verse 17, like a woman with child that draws near the time of her delivery is in pain and cries out in her pangs, so have we been in your sight, O Lord. Every one of us, don't point at anybody else about doing that, because he said all of us have been like that. And if we're honest, we have all in times of our pain cried out to God, haven't we? But now let me tell you something. The difference between living with God every day and serving God every day of your life, not in religious standards, but just living your life the way God wants you to live, and when something happened talking to your father, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the people that never know there's a God exists until they have a problem. That's who he's talking about, huh? And on Easter, Christmas, you know, things like that, you know. Easter and Christmas and whenever you're in trouble. Yeah, whenever it's their choice, you know. They put him back in the bottle and rub the bottle like a genie whenever they want him. That's the ones he's talking about. Not people. If something happens, I would expect my children to come to me if they have a problem. They do, don't they?
Yeah.
They come to us when they have problems. They don't have any problem coming to us. So, but other people have problems coming to their Heavenly Father whenever we have a problem. He's the only one that's going to straighten it out. If we could straighten it out ourselves, then what will we need him for? It's not going to work. We can't do it. We got to let him do it. Okay, verse 18. We have been with child. We have been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind. So all the struggles that we go through, all the things we went through, Passover and Pentecostal experiences in our church experience, in our life experience with religion versus God, he said we brought forth wind. Didn't mean anything, did it? I mean, it taught us something, but there's no fruit in it, is there?
There was an experience.
There was an experience, but no fruit. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. What he's saying was, all the do's and don't do's that the church world has assigned to you to accomplish have brought no deliverance in your life. Have they? You can have our Hail Marys and Our Fathers and communion and water baptism in a certain name and dunk them three times or slap them on the head with a rag or all these different things that people say you've got to do to be right. And he says that we have, through that, we have wrought no deliverance in the earth. And we're talking about within ourselves. We're not talking about the world. If I can't get myself right, if I can't let God deal with me, how am I going to deal with anybody else? That's the issue I've had with the church realm. They take these young kids and stick them out in front of an audience of people that's had 50 years or 60 years or 70 years of life, and that 20-year-old kid is going to tell them how to live their life. They have no experience. They don't know what to tell you. Even King David, whenever he was first chosen and anointed king, he was 17 years old. And it was another 13 years before he began to minister and took his position. How about that?
So
he was 30.
It's at best all theory.
It's all theory what they know. And even if he was saying the truth, he had no force of the Spirit behind it, because it's a hearsay to him. He's never experienced it. He don't know it's true. It's just what someone told him is true.
That water has turned into water?
No, it hasn't. It has not. Neither have the inhabitants of the world, what? Literally it should say fallen prostrate. He said, we've brought no deliverance and no one's give up. No one's become humble. The church world's among the most arrogant people in the world. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Go see them today. They'd be the first to put you in your place. They'd cut your head off, and if you don't believe their doctrine, they'll cut your head off and throw you out the back door. See? That's not humility. Verse 19, your dead men shall, what? Shall revive. Revive, what does it mean? Vive is life. Revive, relive. See? That means you were alive once, died, and you're going to get back again, right? Together with my dead body shall they rise. What are we talking about?
The
crucifixion. With my dead body, we just talked about in verse 12. Is it 12, was it? No, verse 11. When he was lifted up, we were lifted up with him, it says in Romans. When he died, we died in him. And when he was buried, we were buried with him, and or in him. And when he was resurrected, we were raised up with him in the newness of life. Right. But I mean, it's the whole thing. It's the whole gospel's right there. He said, thy dead men shall revive, together with my dead body shall they rise. Awake and sing, you that dwell in the dust, because thy dew is as the dew of the herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. What's he saying? There's two in the earth. One will be taken and one will be left. The dead man's going to be gone. Adam's going, ain't he? The only one left is Christ. Come, my people, verse 20, enter thou into your chambers, not somebody else's. Enter into your chambers. See, this is something we got to work out ourselves. Paul said, work out your own salvation. Literally, it should be deliverance. Work out your own deliverance with fear and respect, or trembling and respect. And shut your door behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpassed. What he's saying is, there's some things going to go out there. Quit worrying about everybody in the world. It's not your place to take care of the world. It's your place to get your world straightened up, isn't it?
Spend some time with God.
Spend some time with God. You don't need to go out there and try to win the world, because you can't anyway. It's all done by His Spirit and His timing, isn't it?
Just take care of yourself.
You take care of yourself, you've accomplished a very, very large task. And I guarantee you, God will recognize it when you take care of yourself. Verse 21, because behold, the Lord comes out of his place, not to punish, but to visit the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. See, everybody thinks he's coming out to punish. They love to bring this punish. And I'm going to see if I can find it. I think it is. Yes, it is. In Isaiah 27, verse 4, it says, fury is not in me. That's God speaking. And literally the word should be anger. Anger is not in me. And that was in the Old Testament. That's when they said he was angry. Church world said he was angry God. He's not angry. He's not angry. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's never had anger in him. But yet they want to put that on him. See, that's someone else's view of who God is.
They try to give God
human qualities. He's spirit. He has no anger in him. These people don't understand these things, so they use their carnal mind to fill in the blanks. Those cherubim jump up and volunteer all kinds of thoughts, and because it runs through their head, they think it's God. But there's two men in the earth, isn't there? One of them has to be taken away.
Adam.
The Adam man's got to go. He already is, but they don't believe it. They keep blowing life into him. Quit carrying that, like he said in Romans, who's going to deliver me from this body of death? That's right. So he says, comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood and shall no more cover her slain. That means he's going to be honest. That earth right there, what earth do you think he's talking about? The only earth I'm worried about is my earth, me. And I'm going to disclose everything about me. The blood is your life, isn't it? And there shall be no more, and no more cover her slain. All the deeds I've done in the flesh, it doesn't make any difference. You lay them boldly before God, and you know what God says? What are you talking about? You can take all your dirty laundry and dump it before God, and God says, where's it at?
He's not concerned with your flesh.
He's already paid the price for it. There's no concern about that stuff.
You're the one who keeps carrying it around.
It's so great to understand that God is not in the book to punish anybody. He's never said he's going to punish us. There's nothing that says he's going to punish us after we die.
We do that.
Yeah, we beat ourselves up. We self-inflicted. I call it shooting ourselves in the foot for Jesus, you know. That's what we do. We suffer for Jesus. I mean, it's insane. He already paid the price, then why do you think you got to crawl on a cross? It's over with. He already said, you died when I died. You were buried when I was buried. When I resurrected, you resurrected in newness of life. Well, then how about living it like that?
They're trying to add to what Christ
did. Sure, they're doctrines they're making. They're doctrines. I can just get excited about it. I don't want to surprise anybody, but I do get excited about it once in a while.